Good morning to you. You well? How's the form? As the saying goes. Sunday morning, July 15th, 2018. Scorcher again. Been saying that for about 6 weeks now. Beautiful, beautiful day in South Manchester. This is Sunday View. I'm going to have a look at the front pages and some of the stories within the country's national broadsheet and tabloid newspapers. It's very Brexit-centric, but don't worry about that. I'm not going to spend an awful lot of time on Brexit today. There's some interesting things, other subjects in the papers as well today. As usual, if you'd like to join in the programme, you can do it. It's very easy. Just tweet me. My Twitter handle hasn't changed. It's at Richie Allen Show. Welcome to Sunday View.
Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
That's the way to reach me then by Twitter. Glorious day. Hope your weekend is going well. There's some very interesting things in the papers besides Brexit today. We'll get to them right now.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Very good morning to Liz Jones. Good morning, Liz. The cricket was lovely. Had a lovely day yesterday watching the one-day international between England and India at Lord's. Not the best game in the world for the neutral now, but I was happy with the England win. Right, I'm going to get rid of the theme tune because I'm not sure I have enough time to get through everything I want to talk about today. And I do prefer to finish this at midday, obviously then so that it repeats at the top of every subsequent hour. If it goes over the time, it's a bit of a pain in the backside for some listeners who grab it on the website as it repeats on a loop. Now, before I look at the papers today, and as I said, there are lots of interesting things in the papers, just want to talk about something that is very, very important. Now, Liz Kershaw is a broadcaster and journalist in this country, very well known. I like her. She's a no-nonsense northerner, open-minded as well, to be fair to her, and she reviews the newspapers every Sunday on Sky News. Now, here she talks about something very interesting and very important, and I don't want to in any way sound preachy here, but I've been banging on about this for a long time. She talks about the Trump visit and how his visit to this country has highlighted the, in my words, rabid intolerance that more and more people seem to have for views they disagree with. It's hugely important. Here's a little bit of Liz Kershaw talking about the conduct of people around the visit of Donald J. Trump to this country.
What has really got more intense this week because of Trump being here is the inability of a person to have a conversation. So if somebody says to me, Trump, absolutely useless, bigot, racist, narcissist, misogynist. So if I simply say, why do you say he's a misogynist particularly? You know, you're not allowed to ask the question. And then you say, well, actually, his predecessors have form. Look at Clinton.
Mm-hmm. True.
Actually in the Oval Office, then denying it, then being impeached. How about the Kennedys, the whole Kennedy clan, abused women on an industrial scale? If you don't mind, I'll just finish the point. So what I'm saying is, why can't we have... I've been playing devil's advocate this week. Why can't we have a discussion without it becoming verbally violent and people immediately casting you as therefore, because I agree with Trump. I'm not saying I like Trump. I'm just saying, well, where's your evidence? Why are you saying that? Rather than knee-jerk mantras that are now,
I understand the point.
Received wisdom.
I understand the point that you're making. Yeah. Even with interviewing people that against Trump. If you put the other side, then I get a whole load of tweets saying you're a Trump supporter, but it's just giving the other side of it.
So there are people here in Scotland who are saying, actually, I don't have a voice. I'm not on this march through London. I'm one of the silent people, and I'm going to put a poster up on my fence, mm-hmm. which overlooks Turnberry, saying, welcome, Donald Trump, and then getting a load of abuse for it.
Yeah, because it's a mindset that has been cultivated by the system. And what it has resulted in is that people have evolved to the point that disagreeing with them is somehow injurious. It's a personal attack on them. And it's so ridiculous, the concept that by disagreeing with someone about a third party whom neither of you have ever met or neither of you have had a relationship with in any way, criticising that third party, you are insulting your friend who likes that third party, him or her. It's engineering, this is. It's classic, this narcissistic personality disorder, which results in people prioritising feelings over evidence or facts. You know, if I feel this way, it must be true. You're attacking me if you contradict me. And I remember when I first started working with Hayden Hewitt, and some of the listeners to this programme were introduced to Hayden for the first time through this programme, even though in his own, if you want to say genre, you know, Hayden would be very well known on his own. But a lot of my listeners and audience wouldn't maybe have known much about his views. So I would get contacted by people absolutely raging. How can you have a relationship with this guy who doesn't believe vaccines are harmful or doesn't believe in geoengineering? And I've dug down into this, and what I've discovered is that people are so incapable of looking at themselves in the mirror and doing a bit of soul searching and looking at the parts of their personality that maybe they are aware of on some level of consciousness, but they don't want to deal with it. So rather than deal with the folly of that, the ludicrous nature of how could you be pals with this guy who disagrees with you on vaccines and climate change, they know this is wrong on some level. So what do? They have their get out of jail card, which is, well, he must be a shill or he must be a plant. This is madness. It's crazy. And it's very important. It's so important to be talking about this. There's a good summing up of it here by Liz Kershaw.
I just think that and it's not just on the Trump issue. I'm tired of mantras. I'm tired of if you voted Brexit, you're older, you're ill-educated, you're thick, you're northern. I'm tired of all men are groping. You know, I'm tired of all these received wisdoms. I just wish we could have conversations about things.
No, you can't have conversations about things. As people become more and more and more inward-looking, as they pigeonhole themselves by aspiring to identity group membership, it's going to get worse and worse and worse and worse. We're going to hear a little bit more from Liz Kershaw in a few minutes, just to give you an idea of the mindset. And some of the listeners to this programme are guilty of it. Now, I spend no time, very little time, looking at Twitter. I'm off Facebook. I've not been near Facebook for nearly 6 weeks now. And once in the blue moon do I have a look at the comments under the YouTube videos, because I don't care whether they're nice or whether they're not nice. It doesn't bother me. I take them, you know, I take them in the same spirit, bad or good. But there was a message on my YouTube channel the other day, and this sums up the mindset of people as they are being programmed and re-engineered to become more and more narcissistic and more intolerant of those who disagree with them. Look at this. This is a comment from somebody calling themselves 21st century heretic. Now, this bozo, classic personality, narcissistic personality disorder, 21st century heretic, piss off. You know, use your own name, for God's sake. Anyway, his or her comment is this. Wonder what Richie's current opinion is of Robert David Steele and Jim Fetzer, two highly respected former guests who seem to be of the opinion that Trump isn't the utter tool and stooge that Richie believes him to be. I personally have no idea who is right here, but I would be very interested to know how Richie squares his erstwhile professed deep respect for these characters and their behind-the-scenes knowledge and his unshakable personal conviction that things are exactly as they appear to be, re-Trump being a cabal-controlled idiot. Imagine how Richie squares his deep respect for these characters with the disagreement that I would have with them on Donald Trump. Right? The statement being by this 21st century heretic, how can you have anything to do with these guys or say that you deeply respect them when they are wrong on Trump? Because I don't judge people by the opinions they have or hold. And I don't dismiss people or walk away from them or close my ears to what they have to say just because we disagree on Donald Trump or anybody else. It's insane, people. It's insane. Grow up. grow up, you know. Right, before the front pages, which are Brexit-centric, there's a big story in today's Sun on Sunday, a story I've been covering for 15 years. Well, just over 15 years, maybe just under. The story in the Sun on Sunday, the headline is, leading medic claims family of Iraq weapons of mass destruction inspector Dr. David Kelly doubt he killed himself, but wife accepted verdict to ensure pension. I'm going to read this for you. The family of Iraq weapons expert Dr. David Kelly doubt he killed himself, a leading medic claims. John Skurr said they accepted he committed suicide because if they had not, his civil service pension might not be paid. The revelation comes 3 days before the 15th anniversary of the death of Dr. Kelly, a former UN weapons inspector in Iraq. He was found dead in a wood after being unmasked as the BBC source in a report accusing Tony Blair's government of sexing up the case for invading Iraq. The Hutton inquiry set up by Blair ruled Dr. Kelly, who denied he was the source, killed himself by slashing his wrist. A blunt gardening knife was found by his side at Longworth, Oxfordshire. Mr. Skurr, 71, said Dr. Kelly's half-sister, plastic surgeon Sarah Pape, called him after the hearing to say she doubted he could take his life on a personal and a medical level. Vascular surgeon Dr. Skurr agreed because the severed artery was small. He said he told her he had concerns as to why Dr. Kelly's wife would accept the hearing's finding when there was no good medical evidence. He went on to say, did Skurr, that Ms. Pape, a former colleague at University College Hospital in London, agreed the likely explanation of the family accepting the result, the verdict, was to ensure the pension would be paid. Ms. Pape didn't respond to requests from the Sun on Sunday for a comment, and the family have remained silent. Have a listen to Liz Kershaw again talking about this today on Sky News. Interestingly, she brings up Novichok and Wiltshire and Russian agents as well.
Well, there was the Hutton inquiry, it cost millions. Greg Dyke resigned, a man of honour, fell on his sword and resigned as Director General of the BBC, and it caused such ructions. A BBC reporter who sort of gave David Kelly away as his source had to resign. But all along we were fed the line, and it goes back to what I was saying earlier about this mysterious file of nerve agent that this couple tragically died, one of them picked, supposed to have just picked up. Now, I said earlier, you'd have to be some hell of a crapsky spy, Russian agent, to just chuck it in the bushes. Not only because you don't want, you know, it's just shabby, but also you're leaving an evidence trail. But David Kelly, the same. So people out there think, oh, she's a rabid conspiracy theorist. But I never believed that David Kelly just walked off into the fields and killed himself. And it was all very unsatisfactory at the time. You know, the inquest, the post-mortem, everything else, the Hutton inquiry. And what's happening now is we're being told that his family didn't actually accept the verdict of suicide either.
No, so that they could get his pension. It's a very good analogy there that she made about Kelly not being stupid enough to attempt to kill himself that way, because David Kelly was a medical doctor, not a PhD. He was a medical doctor, a general practitioner. Russian spies are not stupid enough. They're not, she said, crapsky spies, she said, to be dumping vials of Novichok in the bushes. It just doesn't happen. It doesn't add up. Nothing you are told by your broadcast media adds up. And the journalists are shameless because they just report it. You'd have some respect for them if they just inject just a little bit of incredulity into their voices. They know what they are reading, the copy. You know, they're reading autocue. The autocue, if you've never heard of autocue, their script is rolling up the camera lens. You can't see it, but they can see it. And they know it's bullshit. They know it is, but they just read it anyway. Very good analogy. Speaking of the surgeon John Skurr mentioned today in The Sun on Sunday, he spoke on a programme made by the BBC some years ago called Conspiracy Files. The conspiracy files was typical BBC bullshit bollocks. What they did was they made it look like they were objectively looking at conspiracies like the 7th of July bombings in 2005, September the 11th, of course, and Dr. David Kelly, and made it look like they were, you know, very objective, but they weren't, because the programmes always drew a conclusion at the very end, and the conclusion was that the state version of events was the true version of events. But anyway, here's the surgeon John Skerr on BBC Conspiracy Files quite a few years ago. Here he is explaining why it's pretty much nonsense that David Kelly, Dr. David Kelly, killed himself in the way the Hutton inquiry said he did.
One of the group of doctors and consultants who have published letters questioning the official cause of death is vascular surgeon John Skerr, a specialist in veins and arteries.
I personally don't think I've ever seen anybody die from wrist injuries. I have seen a lot of wrist injuries. It was a very common cry for help type attempt at suicide rather than a genuine attempt at killing themselves.
John Skerr believes that if Dr. Kelly had really meant to kill himself, he cut the wrong artery in the wrong way.
Frankly, I don't believe that simply cutting an ulnar artery will cause death. The radial artery runs down here. The ulnar artery runs down this side of the wrist. The ulnar artery is relatively deep, and to get the ulnar artery, you would need to cut in that sort of direction, which is an unusual way of holding a knife. The body has a lot of self-defensive mechanisms. I mean, as you know, if you take a knife and cut your finger, you don't bleed to death. And the reason you don't bleed to death is you produce all sorts of clever things which seal the circulation and the bleeding stops. If you cut a large artery, then you may not be able to stop the bleeding. Now, the thing we know about the ulnar artery is it's quite small. And so if Dr. Kelly had cut it cleanly, it would have gone into spasm and it would have, you know, probably oozed for a little while, trickled. He might have lost a few hundred mils of blood and then it would have stopped.
And then it would have stopped because the artery wasn't cut properly. Now, what's also interesting is, if you remember, there were some empty boxes of coproximal tablets found near David Kelly's body, and the Hutton inquiry concluded that he had taken coproximal tablets, he had overdosed on them, and it was that overdose married to the artery cut that ultimately caused him to die. But that's bullshit as well, because the autopsy report showed that he only had about 30% levels of coproximal in his body that you would need to kill yourself. He only had about a third of levels that would be seen as and measurable as levels that would kill you. So he hadn't really taken a lot of coproximal anyway. And I've had many interviews with Dr. David Halpin, a renowned trauma surgeon who, along with Skerr there, tried to have another inquest, the Hutton inquiry wasn't satisfactory. They wanted an inquest and they campaigned for years and eventually they were told there wouldn't be an inquest. The idea that a medical doctor like Kelly would take coproximal tablets and not take as many of them as he needed to take, and also that he would make an incision in the wrong artery, is just preposterous. David Kelly was murdered by MI5 to serve as a lesson to anybody else who would want to blow the whistle and maybe throw a spanner in the works of the deep state's plans for Iraq and Afghanistan and everywhere else. He was murdered, as was Robin Cook, the UK former secretary, who apparently suffered a heart attack while out walking with his wife in Scotland. Again, he was murdered. I know he was murdered. You know, I'm not going to get into that because we'll be here all day long. But the circumstances around the death of Robin Cook, equally as bizarre as David Kelly. The deep state murders, the intelligence agencies murder those whom they perceive to be a threat to the plans, the agenda of the establishment. We're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, we're going to look at the front pages of the papers, which are Brexit-centric. We won't spend too long on it, though, but there are one or two interesting things. The Prime Minister was on the Andrew Marr show today. I'll bring you the best of that, as was the Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan. We'll hear a little bit from him as well. This is Sunday View for July 15th, 2018.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. They become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever. Forever.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today.
Absolutely beautiful Sunday morning here in Manchester. I believe it's glorious right across the country. Wherever you happen to be listening, I hope the weather is fine there with you and you're enjoying your weekend, unless, of course, it happens to be that you work weekends. In any case, I hope you're enjoying that as well. Right. Where are we? 22 minutes past 11, excuse me. 22 minutes past 11 UK time as this goes out live. If you're hearing the podcast, of course, later on, it's 22 minutes past whatever, right? Because I don't know. Let's have a look at the front pages of the papers. The Mail on Sunday. May, back me or there'll be no Brexit. Theresa May has written for the Sunday Mail today. The headline, May, back me or there'll be no Brexit. May has warned there may be no Brexit at all because of attempts to wreck her controversial blueprint for Britain's departure from the European Union. She claims in this article today that rival Commons revolts by warring pro- and anti-Europe MPs threaten to sabotage hopes of winning a post-Brexit deal for Britain. And in a hard-hitting message to Brussels, Theresa May says she will not budge an inch on the proposed Brexit deal she agreed with cabinet ministers at her Chequers summit over a week ago. Writing in today's Mail on Sunday, May dramatically raises the stakes in her bid to win support for her proposal to make a success of leaving the European Union. In a bold attempt to kill off plots by both Brexit and Remainer MPs in her own party to make her tear up this new policy, May says, "My message to the country this weekend is simple. We need to keep our eyes on the prize. If we don't, we risk ending up with no Brexit at all." She implies the Tory Brexit rebels who have denounced her common rulebook plan with the European Union on trade regulations could risk a revival of terrorism in Northern Ireland, break up our precious UK with a new border with the Irish Republic, and destroy jobs. Fear-mongering by May. She also lashes out at Conservative Remain MPs, hoping to defeat her in a Commons vote this week by keeping Britain in the European Union customs union. She says it would be the ultimate betrayal of the referendum result and kill off the UK's prospects of winning its own trade deals. She said she wouldn't stand for it. "Some people have asked whether our Brexit deal is just a starting point from which we will regress," she writes. "Let me be clear." "Let me be clear" is a little statement that usually precedes a lie. "Let me be clear," she writes, "our Brexit deal is not some long wish list from which negotiators get to pick and choose." Fighting talk from Theresa May. Fighting talk. But 'tis all a load of owl bollocks. Here's Amanda Platell. She's a Daily Mail journalist and she was on the Andrew Marr show today looking at the papers. Amanda Platel, Daily Mail.
Well, I think it's an indication of how desperate she is, that she feels that she has to come out fighting like this. She's basically saying, back me or sack me, really, and I'm afraid
this
that's
is the
a bit
best
dangerous.
Deal that you'll ever
she's,
get.
She's saying, if you, unless I've come forward with the best deal, unless you accept this, there will be no Brexit. She says, don't take your eyes off the prize. Well, I'm afraid that most Brexiteers think this is a booby prize and that this is nothing like what they imagined they were voting for with Brexit. And look, the Daily Mail has had sack loads and sack loads of mail since that the Chequers meeting. And the messages into the editor are, we've never seen anything like it. And they're all saying, Theresa May has betrayed us. You know, this is Middle England out there, a large number of whom voted for Brexit, and they feel utterly betrayed. I don't know, this almost feels like a threat to them.
She's doing her best to get this through, but she also faces, of course, all these letters going in to the Tory chief whip about a possible leadership test. Where are we on that?
Oh, look, at the moment, the estimates that from inside, say, 30 to 45. But, you know, there's...
The trigger is 48, so they're not far away from the trigger.
But then you've got a lot of MPs going back to their constituencies now who will see the fury of their own members. And, you know, everyone wants to save their skin in politics, don't
they? Absolutely.
This is a secret process at this stage. Nobody really knows what's going on.
It's not that secret, to be honest.
No one's allowed to know who has put their letters in. It's all sealed and locked away.
May's position is as stable as a house of cards in hurricane season in Missouri or in Texas. Right? But she's talking tough in the Mail on Sunday. By the way, there's also an exclusive interview in the Mail on Sunday with Donald Trump. For those of my listeners who like Donald Trump, as you're entitled to do, he met with Piers Morgan on Air Force One for the Sunday Mail or the Mail on Sunday. You can have a look at that there if you want. Mail online is free to read. So May's talking tough, even though she's about as stable as a one-legged man in an arse-kicking competition. But in the Sunday Telegraph, despite her tough talk, there is a very dramatic headline on the front page of the Sunday Telegraph. The headline is, Ex-Minister, I quit over secret plan to file Brexit. Now, Steve Baker quit the government along with David Davis last week. He says he resigned after discovering that for months there has been an establishment elite plan for a much softer Brexit than the one he'd been working on with Davis. This is not quite bombshell to you, dear listener, or to me, but it might be a bombshell for most of the country who don't get their information from programmes like this. While Davis and Baker and other Brexit ministers were working along the hard lines, the red lines, we have to stay in the union, we have to leave the customs union, we have to leave the single market, we have to take back control and all of that, May and the Remainers in the party were working on a soft Brexit. That's the claim made by Steve Baker in the Telegraph newspaper today. And of course, I have no reason not to believe him. He said in an interview with the Sunday Telegraph that the government is now in a pathetic position of supplication to the European Union. And he warns that if May continues to pursue this current white paper plan, public trust in democracy would be lost. And he sets out an extraordinary set of allegations, does Baker. We're back to what civil servants wanted a year ago. The advice they were giving then of something like being in an European economic area plus something like a customs union, he said. You can't work with that, he says. In terms of who ultimately holds the pen on the papers, that goes to Cabinet for collective decisions. It has been the Cabinet Office's Europe unit. And the Cabinet Office's Europe unit has clearly been operating to a different ultimate goal to the one that we were operating to. Eh? Very interesting. And in the Times, in the Sunday Times, on the front page, Davis brands PM dishonest over his Brexit alternative. The recently resigned Brexit Secretary David Davis has accused Theresa May and her aides of being astonishingly dishonest for claiming that there is no alternative to her Chequers plan for Britain's future deal with the European Union. Writing in the Sunday Times, Davis denounced May's plan, saying adhering to EU rules would leave Britain's fingers caught in this mangle and render the control of Parliament over UK law more illusory than real. He accused the Cabinet of having made concessions to the European Union that were so fundamental they risked undermining the whole Brexit process. David Davis said in the Sunday Times Today, "None of this really amounts to taking back control. Some are saying that those on the other side of the argument have not worked out an alternative. This is an astonishingly dishonest claim indeed." So, the Prime Minister Theresa May was on the Andrew Marr show today. Andrew Marr gets straight to the point with a question on the common rule book, which basically means no serious break from European Union regulations. Listen carefully.
Can I ask when you started to write the common rule book idea?
We've been looking at this relationship that we want with the European Union in the future for some time, of course, Andrew. But if I can explain how, perhaps, your
can
question is about...
Answer the question!
Your question is, how have we got to the point where we've got this white paper with the common rule book in it?
And that wasn't his question at all, and Mara needs to be stronger there. Rather than take this crap, this guff, utter guff from May, your question was, no, I specifically said, when did you draw up this common rule book idea? He's not going to get an answer from her.
And if I can just set out that background, because I think it's important. What happened earlier this year was I've been setting out since before we triggered Article 50 and since, in speeches, an approach. I did that in the Mansion House speech.
But what this became is not clear, the Mansion House, that, is it?
Well, much of that is actually the Mansion House
but
speech.
But much isn't.
But the what we did was set out where an approach that we wanted to take. The response that we have had from the European Union, from the European Commission and the European Union leaders has been very clear. They have put two options for us on the table. Neither of those options is acceptable. So we had.
So you've done something else.
We've done something else.
So my question is, when did you come up with a plan for the common rule book?
This is something that has been in gestation for some time. And the reason it's been there is because we have been talking to the European Union and they have made clear that what we'd proposed in Mansion House, that this particular aspect, was not negotiable.
When did your former Brexit secretary, David Davis, know about the common rule book? When did he know?
Good stuff from Marr. It's been in gestation for some time, she said. When did David Davis know about it, says Marr. So she wouldn't tell him when the common rule book idea manifested. And he knows she'll never tell him. He's too experienced. She's too experienced. That she'll just waffle away contentedly. This is the crux. When did David Davis know? And was Davis negotiating unknowingly in bad faith? Was he? Was he hammering away at Michel Barnier on the red lines? Meaning, was Davis saying no customs union, no single market, no regulations from Europe? Was he doing that while May, behind his back, was working on a common rule book? So again, Marr just asked her, when did David Davis know about it?
I've been talking with David Davis about the approach that we should be taking for some time.
I asked a very specific question. When did he know about the common rule book?
He knew. We have been talking about this for some time. But Andrew, you haven't allowed me to set out why what the European Commission proposed was unacceptable. No. And I want to do that because it's important.
Because it's gone, all of that now, isn't it? We're in a new place. We're with this.
We're with that. But it's the reason we're with that. And I think a lot of people want to know why it is that we have put this proposal forward.
When did David Davis know?
On the one hand, it was what would have been for us a very poor trade deal and would have kept Northern Ireland in the customs union, effectively carving Northern Ireland out in these terms.
God be with the days of Jeremy Paxman, whatever you might think of him, you know. At least he'd keep jumping in there. When did David Davis know about a common rule book?
Out in these terms from the UK. Mm-hmm. That's unacceptable to any government here in the UK. And on the other hand, what they call EEA Plus, which would have meant accepting free movement and accepting being in the customs union. Both of those are unacceptable.
When did Davis know?
They're what people voted against. So faced with that, we had an option. We could go for no deal, and of course, you know, no deal is still there, it's still possible. But I think that the best thing for the UK is to have a deal that sets a good relationship with our trading partners in the future.
Yeah, we've heard that one
so
before.
So if we're going to find something that was in Britain's interests, that delivered on the referendum and that was negotiable, we had to make what is a compromise, but is a positive in terms of the benefits that it gives us.
The trouble is that in doing all of this, you cut out the man you'd put in charge of the Brexit negotiations and his department. They were working on a different plan.
Good stuff, finally! They were working on a different plan, weren't they, Terry May? They were over there working on the, well, leave means leave idea. And behind their backs, you made them look complete and utter morons. Because not only behind their backs were you working on a different plan, but treacherous, cretinous bastards like Philip Hammond and the Department of the Treasury were having conversations with the European Union. Unknown to David Davis, where they were telling the European Union, listen, forget about what Davis is saying, we're working on a very soft Brexit plan in the background. So Davis had the legs cut out from under him, basically.
Different plan. They had no idea about this comment.
No idea.
Book, and you cut them out, and therefore he had no option but to resign, and he's clearly very angry about it.
No, let me be very clear.
Let me be very clear. The nose begins to grow. Here comes the lies.
That no department was cut out of these discussions. Discussions but have been taking place for some considerable time. David Davis himself has been one of those.
David Davis knew about the Common Rule Book.
David Davis, we have been discussing this option. David Davis was discussing with Michel Barnier. Michel Barnier had made clear to him the unnegotiability of the position that we.
Very clever, isn't she? We'll give her a little bit of credit. She's too clever to flatly say David Davis knew about the Common Rule Book. She can't say that, because if she does, it's the end of her. Because Davis quite clearly, patently, didn't know about this rule book being drawn up to keep some sort of regulatory alignment between the UK and the European Union. He hadn't a clue. Like I said, he was over there negotiating in good faith, at least he thought he was. While behind his back, Treasury ministers working for Philip Hammond were secretly telling the European Union, we're going to come up with some sort of regulatory alignment thing, because we know that we're never really going to leave. And Davis was hung out to dry. But she's too clever to say, yes, Davis definitely did know, because he would annihilate her, presumably, by lunchtime. Going on national television and saying, well, I didn't know.
...that we had. So we had a choice. We could have said, well, let's stick where we are and see what happens and risk actually ending up with a chaotic leaving, which I don't think is in people's interests.
Yeah. David Davis didn't have a Scooby-Doo. Now, in this next clip, you're going to hear Andrew Marr demonstrates why the rule book, the common rule book, that is, definitively prohibits the United Kingdom from doing free trade deals with other countries. Can we say he hoists her by her own petard? May reads from the actual rule book. Well, he reads from the government's white paper and basically hands her arse.
The problem with the rule book, and that's why David Davis and Boris Johnson and indeed Donald Trump and Peter Mandelson are so upset with it, is that it doesn't allow us to do new trade deals around the world in the
wrong.
Same way.
That's
well,
wrong.
You say
it
that's
does
wrong.
Allow You're... us to do new trade deals around the rest of the world.
Paragraph 163. In the context of trade negotiations, a common rule book for goods would limit the UK's ability to make changes to regulations.
Absolutely brilliant. He's just cut her in half there by reading from her own book. Do you want to hear that again? Reading from her own manifesto, her own white paper on how she sees things going with the European Union in the future. He absolutely does her up like a kipper here.
Negotiations, a common rule book for goods would limit the UK's ability to make changes to regulations.
Limit the UK's ability to make changes to regulations.
Now that is exactly the problem. You say it yourself in your own white paper.
Yes, there would be regulatory standards, but actually some of these are regulatory standards that we wouldn't want to change anyway.
Sure.
Because we've been, and I've, as I've said...
But what if you wanted to change them, though? What if in the future you disagreed with something or you wanted to change it? You're stumped, you can't do, Because you're in alignment with the European Union.
As I've said consistently, no, we can change them. But let me come on to that. But this fundamental point about regulatories.
Absolute bollocks. And what you got was just I'm not going to play it for you because it's dreadful. More and more and more and more waffle there. Like I said, he did her up like a kipper. She talked a lot of monumental old bollocks there. She said, but on a lot of these regulations, we'd agree with anyway, you heard that. The fact is, you know, what if you wanted to change them? And the fact is that this white paper does make it more difficult to do a deal with any country outside the European Union. And what the common rule book does effectively is give the European Union a kind of a veto over what the UK could do with other countries. Here's a good question from Andrew Marr. After all of this old waffle and all of this old crap, well, the European Union can just say no anyway, right?
The politics of it now, isn't the truth that you can now go to Brussels and say, look, I have splintered my cabinet to get this. I've had infuriated a lot of people in my own party. I have pushed things as far as they possibly can be pushed. This is as good as it gets. Accept it in total. Don't come back to me and say, oh, no, you must move a little bit further, Prime Minister, when it comes to immigration or whatever it might be. Yeah. This, no more concessions, no more changes, no dodging, no weaving.
We're going to sit down in a negotiation, but in my view, there are certain things that are non-negotiable. It is non-negotiable that free movement will end. We will end free movement. It is non-negotiable that we're coming out of the customs union so we can have our independent trade policy. We will do that. We will come out of the customs union. It's non-negotiable that the European Court of Justice will no longer have jurisdiction in the United Kingdom.
You've kept back on immigration. You've kept back the possibility that in these negotiations you could concede that EU citizens would have more right to come and work here than citizens of other non-EU countries, haven't you?
No, what will happen in...
Another lie. No, she said. It's plain. It's as clear as day that they're willing to give up the right of EU citizens. They're willing to give up their rights to say who comes in and who doesn't come in by agreeing to the European Union that European Union citizens can still come and find work here. She's lying.
What will happen in the trade agreement, as happens in any trade agreement, is that there's a section that is about mobility. And this term has been conflated sometimes with free movement. It's completely different. What this is about is things like if you're the manufacturer of a photocopier and you've sold it to somebody in France and you want to maintain, you've got to service that photocopier, that sort of movement of an individual to be able to do that will be covered by those mobility provisions.
More waffle. And the final little bit of audio from Theresa May today, thank God I hear you cry, is what was that brutal advice that Donald Trump gave her? Trump was bragging about giving her advice on how to deal with the European Union. What was it, as a matter of interest?
OK, the whole country wants to know, Prime Minister, what was that brutal, tough suggestion?
He told me I should sue the EU.
Sue the EU?
Sue the EU. Not go into negotiations, sue them. Actually, no. We're going into negotiations with them. But interestingly, what the President also said at that press conference was don't walk away.
Yeah.
Don't walk away from the negotiations because then you're stuck. So I want us to be able to sit down to negotiate the best deal for Britain.
Yeah. Sue them, says Trump. What a moron. You should stay in the negotiations. You shouldn't walk away, says Donald Trump. What a moron. Nonsense. There's only one way to negotiate. If I was David Davis, before each morning they fly to Brussels. Well, they flew there and they stayed there for a few days. But on the flight over, I would be saying to my entourage, if I was David Davis, before we go to meet the European Union, this is what I'd be saying to my entourage.
Listen to me now, listen to me. I want them standing back thinking what the fuck is going on here. Not for the first 5 minutes, every fucking minute of the game. Fucking manic aggression. Did you scare anyone? Did you fucking put the fear of God into anyone?
Absolutely. Manic aggression. Did you scare anyone in the negotiations? Did you put the fear of God into anyone? Listen, you sell more to this country than we sell to you. We're leaving. Things will stay as they are at the moment. You won't impose any tariffs on UK goods because if you do, we will fucking destroy the French and German car industries. We will level them by refusing to allow those cars into this country. The wines, the food, everything else. Do you understand? And in a real world, the European Union would have backed down. It is 16 minutes to the top of the hour. We're going to leave Brexit alone. You're sick of it. Did you put the fear of God into anyone? I want them standing back saying, what the fuck is going on here? That was Paul O'Connell, by the way, former Lions and Irish Rugby Union captain. Big man, I wouldn't get on the wrong side of him. So the rest of the papers, the Sunday Observer, Mandelson joins Brexiters with attack on May's EU humiliation. That's Peter Mandelson, as evil a human being as you're ever likely to encounter, by the way. The Sunday Express, betrayal of Brexit, same as before. Interesting bit of tat in the Sunday Mirror. Married Tory minister quits over 2,000 sex texts. The Minister for Small Business, Andrew Griffiths, has resigned because it's been discovered that he sent text messages to two female constituents. The Sunday Mirror has called them depraved social media messages. Depraved! Right. What could be depraved these days? He says he's deeply ashamed at his behaviour and he's an embarrassment to the Prime Minister. I tendered my resignation and I'm going to get help. He's going to go to counselling to make sure he doesn't send any dirty texts again in the future. The Sunday Mirror has taken the moral high ground and has avoided getting into the sordid details in terms of what he actually texted, but The Sun on Sunday has no such moral compunctions. The Sun alleges, The Sun on Sunday, that amongst the reported messages, he wrote, take off the bra and panties, you've got daddy in such a frenzy, and daddy is going to have to put some manners on you. The dirty bastard. In other messages, it's alleged that he told the girls he previously had a lover who dressed up like a pig, piggy nose, ears, and a piggy tail. What is it with the Tories and pigs? Eh? He also boasted about being powerful in politics and told the two girls, I can be an evil bastard when I'm turned on. One of the barmaids told the paper that she was shocked and that she felt dirty. Please! Please! Give me a break. A barmaid found those text messages dirty. Really? Honestly? And that she felt dirty? Really? Come on. Come on. You know, there aren't too many men, you know, who went through college or university like myself who never worked in a bar. Some of the things said to the barmaids and occasionally to the barmen by raucous and drunken women, far worse than some of those texts, to be honest with you. Eh? I felt dirty. Yeah, right. Here's an interesting story. High-tech mirror that points out all your flaws should come with a mental health warning. This is in the Sunday Telegraph. A high-tech mirror that tells you how ugly you are should come with a mental health warning, according to campaigners. This mirror, this is all about technology, it scans the owner's face to detect flaws and presents the owner with a detailed analysis of the most unattractive parts of their face. Wonderful. What a wonderful device, eh? Wonderful. They say that it doesn't get anywhere near children, but that's a load of bollocks. It's probably aimed at children, ultimately. They know that young women, young girls, young boys will want a device like that. Unbelievable stuff. That's in the Sunday Telegraph if you want to read it. And also in the Sunday Telegraph, good stuff today. Headline, why tech giants Amazon and Google want to control your doorbell. You've seen these ads about the doorbell with the cameras. Well, the company that's designed that feature is actually owned by Amazon, but they want to extend what this doorbell can do, right? Not just to be a security device and that, but they want the doorbell to be able to give a virtual key to a courier. So a courier will come along, and you know the couriers, they've got these little electronic devices now that you sign electronically for the package. They want these doorbells now to give a little virtual electronic key so that the courier can then just open your door and leave the package inside. This is just unbelievable stuff. I don't have time to get into it now because I'm running out of time and I wanted to play you a little bit of Sadiq Khan. But this is where it's going. Basically giving up your front door space to Google and to Amazon. Amazon paid $1 billion for Ring. Ring is a startup company that pioneered the smart doorbells. these devices have cameras. So now there's nowhere that you're not going to be watched. You know, there's also a privacy aspect to this as well. Every house in the world with doorbells looking out onto the street, you know. What could possibly go wrong? Eh? They've also have Amazon, Whole Foods companies, and a pharmaceutical delivery startup called PillPack. They're buying everything up, Amazon. It's going to own everything. Pretty soon it'll be the only place to go to buy anything. Then it'll control your front door, the space in front of it, and it will have a window onto the world, the street beyond the front door of your house. What could possibly go wrong, eh? And techie Muppets, you know, they celebrate this stuff as if it's brilliant, it's great, it's so convenient. Yeah, it's convenient, all right. Christian doctor fired for saying people can't choose their own gender. He basically said, I had to speak out because I couldn't live with myself if I didn't at least express my opinion. And he said other colleagues are too frightened to speak up. This is Dr. David Macareth, 26-year medical career. And he's had to basically piss off because he said he was offered a job as a medical assessor for the Department of Work and Pensions. And he was told to refer to people seeking disability allowance as whatever gender they bloody well wanted. So should a man walk into his office claiming he was a woman, he would need to be treated as such and described in any correspondence with the pronoun she, not he. In an age in which the government and the NHS were subjecting transgender issues to ever greater scrutiny, it was an edict that he had been dreading, this Dr. Macareth, and one he was unwilling to obey. As a Christian, I believe gender is determined biologically and genetically, and he was aware that expressing that belief would be likely to end his career, which it did. His contract with the DWP was swiftly terminated. If you have an opinion and the establishment doesn't like it, you are gone. Talked about this at the top of the programme. The London Mayor, Sadiq Khan, was on Andrew Marr today, and he was asked about the Trump balloon, the balloon that was flown over Westminster Square with Trump looking like a baby. Was it a good idea, said Andrew Marr? This is the US leader, he's coming here. Oughtn't we to afford him just a little bit more respect? This was Sadiq Khan's reply.
Well, it wasn't my blimp or my balloon, but we have in our city...
You're responsible for it being up there, though.
We have in our city, in our country, as indeed does the USA, a rich history of the right to protest, the right of free speech, and the right to express our views. And the idea that we would curtail these rights because it may cause offence. And by the way, can you imagine the founding fathers in the USA... or US jurists saying we're going to curtail our rights of free speech in America, we're going to curtail the First Amendment because somebody may be offended. And actually, what you saw on Friday was peaceful protest and done in a safe way.
But here is somebody who is coming here as a guest. He is going to be very, very important, not just to the UK, but specifically to London, how he treats us. He says he now feels unwelcome in London. It was designed to hurt him, and it certainly did hurt him. Is that really wise politics at the moment?
It's not my job as the mayor to censor the views of Londoners and others. By the way, who want to express their views, not just about President Trump, about some of his policies and some of his values. And here's the point. We have a special relationship with the USA. It's like having a best friend. The expectations we have from the USA are far higher than we would over another country or another leader. And basically, Londoners and others are disappointed that the US president hasn't met those high standards. And we should celebrate the fact we've got these rights and privileges, some would say, in our city and our country. And actually, so does the USA. And the US ambassador himself, you know, Ambassador Woody Johnson, made the point that the USA and the UK have this unique and rich history of freedom of speech. And he sees no problem with that.
So if somebody creates a rude balloon about Sadiq Khan or Free Tommy Robinson, those will be allowed to fly over Westminster Square as well, will they?
His answer is very interesting. Listen very carefully to what Khan says. So if there's a Sadiq Khan balloon or a protest that is calling for the freeing or the releasing of Tommy Robinson, those would be okay. Listen to Khan's response.
Westminster Square as well, will they?
If they are peaceful and they are safe and the police approve, yes. Yesterday.
If they are peaceful and if they are safe and if the police approve. In other words, it's okay to say that, to assemble and cheer for Tommy Robinson, but only if you don't say certain things and if you don't chant certain things. So in other words, there isn't any free speech. Oh, and by the way, if the police approves it, marvellous.
By the way, in London, in our city...
What an idiot Khan is. Marr asks him about racism.
You've had a really personal run-in with Trump. He clearly can't stand you and you can't stand him. And it's been going to and forward. Is this, do you think, because you're Muslim?
Well, look, that's for President Trump. Your next guest maybe will have an answer. She's so close to him. But my point is very simple. Look, I didn't start this feud. Takes two to tango. Hold on a second. I mean, he is the president who tweets about me voluntarily.
Yeah, he waffles on a bit and then Mara jumps in.
You've been very diplomatic. Here is your friend, David Lammy, being slightly less diplomatic. The real reason Trump blames my friend Sadiq Khan for the terror attacks last year is simple. He hates that London chose a Muslim mayor. The president is racist. Do you think he's racist?
It's not for me to say whether he's racist or not.
Do you think he's racist?
I don't think he's racist, but I think when you amplify the tweets of Britain First, not once but twice, Britain First have been banned from Facebook.
I don't think he's racist, but when you amplify the tweets from Britain First, when you retweet something you agree with, if it's something said by a group that we have banned, you can't do that, or you're going to be labelled a racist too. This is where we're moving, and we've got to do something about it, folks. You can find more of that on bbc.co.uk. The Mail on Sunday has that interview that Piers Morgan conducted with Donald Trump on Air Force One, if you want to read that. That's about it for the programme, by the way. Thanks so much for listening to Sunday View. Back with you live tomorrow, Monday, at 7 p.m. UK time. I will be joined by, among others, Gilad Atzmon, whom really want to talk to about these issues and others. The jazz saxophonist, writer and broadcaster Gilad Atzmon joins me on tomorrow's programme. It's a scorcher out there. Try and get a bit of time away from the TVs and away from the phones and the tablets. I always say this, but relax and enjoy your Sunday. Take some time away from technology and chill out. Enjoy the rest of the day. Look after yourselves and one another. Going to leave you with a little bit of classic George Michael, which will close out today's programme. This is Flawless. I'll see you tomorrow. Bye for now.
Perfection, perfection. Like no other.
Flawless. Absolutely flawless.
Perfection, 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 perfection.
Maybe. Flawless. Maybe. Absolutely flawless. Perfection, perfection.
Maybe tonight. We'll
flawless.
See you tonight.
Absolutely flawless.
Beautiful.
Flawless. Absolutely flawless.
And it's no good waiting by the window. It's no good
flawless.
Waiting for the sun.
Flawless.
Please believe me, things you dream of, they don't fall in the
hands
of no one.
Absolutely flawless.
And it's no good, it's no good, no good waiting.
Flawless.
Waiting.
Absolutely flawless.
And it's no good, it's no good.